Good evening, one and all. Yes, middle of another week, way starting through into July. I mean, summer's just whizzing by. Well, it feels it anyway, but at least we've had some nice weather, and again, it's a nice day today. But I am here, and so is my guest. Now, when I was on the show yesterday talking to, what's his name, Jody Millman, one of the things I said at the start, and this has been, I think this has definitely been for about the last 10 years, and that is the increase in the number of doctors and the number of lawyers that are now writing books. Now, as I said to Judy yesterday, I think on her kind, on the legal side, it's because obviously lawyers are telling stories the whole time. And when it comes to doctors, is it the fact that they don't have to write now and they can use the laptop or what have you, and thus people can read their writing? I don't know. My guest might be able to help us with that, because my guest, he sort of came from the medical stream of things, shall I say. But in fact, to my mind, he did things a little bit opposite to what people normally do when they work in that sort of environment. But we'll find out more, because I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Mike Krentz. Hi, Mike, how you doing?
Hi, Barry. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to our chat.
Thank you. Pleasure to have you. Mike, as I said, you sort of, well, you studied English, but you went on to the doctorate, the medical side of things. But whereas people might go into the forces, do the medical stuff there and then go out into sort of private practice, you did it the other way. You started in private practice and then went into the Navy and the Marines in your case.
That is correct.
So what led you down that path?
I credit my drive to be a writer to my mother, who was a voracious reader, and shared what she read. So she instilled it in me very early, a love of reading. And she was also a nurse, and
Ah.
she loved to talk about her past. She was not actively nursing when I was a child, but she loved to talk about it. So I kind of got it from both sides. I got the right brain, I call the right brain stuff, and the left brain stuff from my mom. I majored in English. I wanted to go to medical school. I wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't want to be a pure scientist per se. I didn't want to major in a scientific discipline like biology, chemistry,
Right.
physics, like most pre-med students do. I figured this is my last shot at doing something non-scientific that I love to do. So I majored in English in college, and I got a bachelor's degree at the University of San Francisco in English. And as a result of my aberrant pathway, shall we say, I almost didn't get into med school
Wow.
because most of the places where I interviewed for med school told me that I hadn't taken enough science.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. And I finally interviewed at the Medical College of Wisconsin, which was like the last gasp. And I happened to interview with a psychiatrist, and he says, he asked me how many schools I'd applied to, and how many had accepted me, and I told him the answer, and he says, "Well, what's the problem?" I said, "Well, they say I didn't have enough science." And he said, "Well, that's kooky." And I said, "I'm in." And sure enough, I got accepted there and completed medical school. I actually thought I wanted to be a neurosurgeon. And I did a straight surgical internship and started a neurosurgery residency, and very quickly figured out that was not for me. And at the time, quite a few decades ago now, there was this new discipline arising called emergency medicine. And these were doctors who dedicated their entire careers to practicing in the emergency department. And I loved it. Being somewhat of an adrenaline junkie,
Right.
I I got out of the neurosurgery program, got into the emergency medicine practice track at that time. There weren't even that many residencies. And I spent the better part of my career, my early career, practicing emergency medicine, which was a great source of future stories for the future doctor writer.
Right. Yes.
You see things in the emergency department that particularly one of the places I worked at was Parkland Hospital in Dallas,
uh-huh.
which was the large public hospital in Dallas. And I mean, there's things you see there that you just don't see them in the grocery store. You know,
because yes. I only imagine.
Yeah. So I did that. And I guess I'm probably a bit of a wandering soul. I'm always looking for something new. And I got kind of started getting bored. And I was getting older too, and the nights and the weekends and all the adrenaline wasn't quite as charming to me as it had been, you know, a few decades earlier.
Right.
And this was right after Desert Storm.
Yeah.
And so I had a couple of friends who were military physicians who'd gone to support the military. And one day I'm sitting there at my desk and I get a flyer from a Navy recruiter, a Navy nurse recruiter, saying, you could be a Navy doctor, a flight surgeon, and you could even fly in Navy jets.
Wow.
Would you be interested? And I was at that time actually a private pilot, and I loved aviation and I loved flying. And the rest, as they say, is history. I mean, she had me hooked from day one. It took me a while to make the big transition. So I went in and I joined the Navy, spent 20 years there. In various roles, including running an emergency department in a military hospital. But I also got to spend a good half of my career, at least, on operational medicine things, deploying in aircraft carriers. I was a senior medical officer on an aircraft carrier. I was a fleet surgeon, where many of the things you do are really more population-based, shall we say, in terms of deploying medical assets to support the naval forces wherever they may happen to be and whatever they might be engaged in, which provided a whole nother bunch of potential stories for the future Navy.
I'm sitting there listening, thinking, hang on, this is a naval version of MASH almost. There's another series there we've got.
Yeah, exactly. So go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
After you.
No, I was going to say, so when I was facing mandatory retirement, because they said, Krentz, you're not getting another age waiver. You got to get out and give us a young guy a chance. So I said, well, what am I going to do? I'm still young in my mind. And I decided, well, you know, I've always loved writing. I'm going to be a writer. Now, that was probably the most naive career choice life decision I ever made in my life, because I had no idea how difficult it was going to turn out to
right.
be. But I persevered. And that's what I actually started during my last tour. Started writing a series of military fiction novels that I ended up self-publishing, and they did okay. But then I decided, well, what I really need to do is start writing about my true love, which is the ER, the emergency
yep.
department, emergency physicians, the people I've known and respected throughout my career. So that's what spawned Dead Already,
which was your first your first big book, which, as you say,
right.
takes people to the emergency medicine, where, as it says here, life battles death amid terrified screams, plaintive whimpers, and shouted orders. Yep, that sounds like ER.
Oh, yeah. I think the thing I liked about it is I would go to work and I had no idea what sort of patients I was going to see, what challenges I would have. I had a general sense, but you never know what's going to come through the door next. And
that's the thing. No 2 days will be alike. No 2 patients will be alike.
Exactly.
So it's not exactly, you're not exactly going to get bored with the repetitiveness along the way.
That's true. That's very true.
So you brought in Dead Already, you brought this medical environment into sort of like a mystery or a thriller.
I did. I love thrillers. I love mysteries. I'm a great fan of, I love John Grisham, so that's not entirely a mystery, but Michael Connelly, David Baldacci, Patricia Cornwell, obviously because she writes medical stuff, Tess Gerritsen. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write what I thought was a medical thriller, and we're actually rebranding the series now as medical conspiracy thrillers.
Okay.
The story involves a somewhat flawed middle-aged emergency physician who's a former Navy doctor who had a very, very tragic personal event happen to him, losing the woman he truly loved, and he's trying to recover from the aftermath of that, and he's practicing in the emergency department. And he sees a patient comes in full cardiac arrest and dies. And he realizes he saw the guy the previous day and sent him home, which is every emergency physician's nightmare.
Right.
You never want the person who's relieving for your next shift say, you know that patient you sent home yesterday?
Yeah.
It's never going to be he came back to thank you. Okay, it's always some disaster. So this patient happened to be the husband of a nurse in that very hospital. She files a malpractice claim, and Zach Winston, the main character, the doctor, is crushed, as would be any doctor who's threatened with a malpractice suit. He hooks up with and professionally hooks up with a female defense lawyer by the name of Bridget Larson. And they have very much of a push-pull relationship because despite her admonishments, he's not entirely honest with her about his past. As they go down the process, his past comes up to slap him in the face. And then they begin to peel back the layers and they find out what's really going on. And I don't want to spoil the story, but
oh, no.
it turns out it's really not about the malpractice, the alleged malpractice at all. There's a deeper conspiracy involved that begins to manifest itself in some unusual deaths that occur as the book continues. So Zach and Bridget kind of become amateur sleuths in a sense. And as they uncover this this conspiracy, they also end up putting themselves in grave physical danger.
Wow. It's I mean, after your sort of two, your other sort of military books, when you finally got to this one being sort of like your full-length fiction book, did it surprise you how much work you had to do even once the book was there in your hand?
Oh, yes. Well, I guess it didn't surprise me, but it didn't thrill me either. The whole marketing aspect of being an author is a challenge.
Yeah.
It's a challenge to even the top-notch authors, bestsellers, perennial bestsellers.
Even the people who you think are like that, it surprises them every time the amount of work they have to do and that. I mean, we have some.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying to Jody yesterday about. I've forgotten his name now. Never mind. But person who comes on the show, Steve Berry, comes on the show like once a year, has done for the last 10, 12 years. And he always comes on with his new book comes out. And he's always got three on the go. He has one just coming out, one that's going through the editing stage and just ready to be, started on the next printing stage, and then one he's just writing. And he comes on here, and he's got, what, 65, 70 million books in print around the world. And he says, yeah, still has to do a lot of, he's still all on Facebook, and he has to do this, and he has to do that. It never stops. The days of having people do it for you just aren't there anymore.
No, they're not. And it can be fun. You can make it fun. Yeah. But you have to be careful that it doesn't take away from job one, which is writing the next book.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean, because that's how I started doing these shows, because I had a book, a YA book came out, and I was doing the shows around, you know, around the shows and stuff like that, and the radios and everything. And I thought, some of these people, some of these, you know, these hosts are hopeless. I'm having to lead them. You know, I enjoy a good chat. Perhaps I should, you know, try a show of my own. And there was another lady in my writing group, and she wanted to try a show. So I was a guest on her show. She was a guest on my show. And that was like 10, 12 year ago. And one thing led to another, to two shows a week, three shows a week, four shows a week. One time I was doing five shows a week. It's down to four shows a week now. But, you know, and the sort of second book in the series is still stuck on about chapter 40, you know. I just do the only thing I write these days are, you know, karaoke parodies and stuff like that. But it, in my case, it was a case of, well, I think I'm better off doing these shows than I am trying to write another book. But you went straight from that success of Dead Already to another psychological thriller in Angels Falling.
Right. Angels Falling is a standalone, at least at the moment it is, although I'm not sure the characters are done with me.
Exactly. Because we say this all the time, that you have no choice in the matter. The characters tell you.
It's exactly that. It's the characters, and they're running around inside your head, and even when you're not aware of it, and they're telling you what they want to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can't do that. You've got to do this. I tell this story. We had a lady on the show, historical fiction writer. I think it was like a 20 historical romance, about a 20-second book had just come out, and she was with a big publishing and everything else. And we were talking about this, about the, you know, characters lead you down minor, you know, different paths, minor roles, minor characters want major roles, some even demand their own book and stuff like that. And she said, yes, the book she was on the show talking about, she had a character she tried to kill off six times, and the character wouldn't die. She had to go back and rewrite the whole plot.
Oh, boy.
So at the moment, Angels Falling, which is a psychological thriller. Really,
yeah, it's a bit of a neo-gothic, much darker than Dead Already. There's a lot of religious tropes, if you will, or references. It is not a by any way. It means a religious novel, but there's some fairly deep background in Catholicism and demonology and angels and that sort of thing. But the short version is that a Catholic archbishop is found murdered on the altar at his cathedral in a very ritualistic way, and an FBI profiler by the name of Pete Sullivan, and a forensic psychologist by the name of Maria Santos are aiding in the investigation. And turns out they have a past, a remote past from about 20 years previously, where both of them suffered disgrace, unjustly so. They suffered unjust disgrace at the hands of a third party who manipulated them into, and he was going to be a priest, she was going to be a nun. They got kicked out because of this third party's manipulation. And now they're seeing each other again for the first time in like 20 years and having to deal with the multiple clues, and the villain turns out to be a deeply flawed psychiatric. I'm not going to give away the diagnosis.
No, don't give it away. But it does sound like there could be another book or two with characters like that. You know, it's.
I'm toying with maybe having them show up in one of the medical course.
That's the best way. Get everybody together.
Yeah. You know, it's like Michael Connelly, you know, he brings the Lincoln lawyer into the Harry Bosch stories every once in a while. And I'm kind of thinking, well, that might be interesting.
Yeah,
I'm toying with that.
Also, and you mentioned earlier about the your military stuff. You have a new series. I'm pretty sure it's a series which you're just starting. I think you said it might come out this year or next year. Mahoney and Squire series. That's
right.
That's a military background, but it also has a bit of medical in it as well. Does it?
It does, and it's not a shoot 'em up, blow things up, you know, blood and gore kind of Clancy-esque sort of thing. It really is human stories, and particularly revolving around the lives and challenges of military women,
right,
who are among my heroes.
Yeah.
I can tell you, for instance, that a woman who has succeeded in naval aviation has had to work twice as hard as her male counterparts and has had to endure a lot more challenges. And so the protagonist, one of the protagonists, is a female naval aviator named Kate Mahoney,
mm-hmm.
Who is divorced, has a troubled teenage son. And she's forward deployed in the Western Pacific, and the son's back in the U.S. There's just conflict on both the professional and personal sides, and how she deals with that is really the story.
Yeah, that's
Squire,
a hard part, I'd have thought. You know, balancing the physical and emotional struggles of somebody, you know, not just in their job, per se, how their life works around it and within it.
Exactly, because you don't quit being a human being when you put on the uniform, and you don't just suddenly get over all of your past traumas, psychological profiles, or whatever, and you bring all that to you. And particularly difficult if you're from a broken relationship and you still have to be a mom.
Yeah, I mean, especially with teenagers these days. I mean, that's the...
yeah.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. And if you're not there, if you're on duty or what have you, it's trebly hard.
Right, right. And there are certain things that you just need to do if you're going to advance. And
so
part of the crisis is, for this woman, is can I continue to do both roles? The title of the first book is called Her Show of Force.
Okay.
Show of Force is a military term, which basically means that you challenge a potential enemy with a huge show of force. You sail all your ships and your airplanes and everything into the theater of operations, and you say, "Do you really want to mess with this?"
Mm.
And she applies that to her personal challenges as well.
Wow. And as I said, I believe this is going to be a series.
It is a series, yes.
Yeah.
I've actually already submitted the second one, and I'm working on the revision of the third one.
Oh, great. So you're keeping yourself busy then?
I am. I am.
Okay.
I have a way of doing that.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And the fact that you've got really, I mean, you could say there is a thread of similarity running through the three books, and could end up in three separate series, but they do have their own individualism and their individual sort of style and pathway. So that must keep it a little bit fresh in, you know, for you as well, the fact that you can sort of go from what perhaps one to the other without sort of, you've got some, as I said, you've got some thread, but you do have the sort of flexibility in the different styles and almost genres which you got there. So that's good.
Correct.
So do you feel happy working through these now? Do you think this is going to keep you busy? Are you settled, or are you going to be off and traveling or doing something else again?
Oh, no, this is it. This is like my fifth or sixth career in my life, and this is definitely the last one. I'm having a lot of fun with it, And I'm going to continue doing it as long as my mind continues to work.
Right. Yeah, that's the hardest part I find. I keep
Mm-hmm.
trying. I mean, I the last month suddenly I've forgotten a couple of things, and I'm getting angry with myself. I definitely find I'm talking to myself more.
I can relate to that, and I guess one of the benefits of writing is you can make those errors, but you get to go back and revise them.
Exactly. You can go back and find out what you've done
Yeah.
wrong, and oh,
Yeah.
crikey, I miss. And it's funny. I don't know about you, but I know even now if I sort of pick up one of my books and read it, I sort of look at it. Where the heck did those words come from? That's not me. That's not me writing that. They're not words I use. It's like it's somebody else did it. It's like you're on automatic pilot, you know. And it just as you said, we're the conduit that sort of takes it down in this universe, sort of thing.
I agree. I have a theory that we're always writing, mostly in our subconscious, and what we need to do to produce the work is eventually sit down at the computer, the typewriter, whatever, and let it flow.
Yes, totally
And
agree.
if you let it flow, it comes out, but it doesn't come out until it's ready to come
Ready,
out.
yeah. I it's
Yeah.
like you said automatic pilot sort of stuff there. When I was writing my other books, I was doing a lot of running, and I used to, I was on the seafront in England, and I used to sort of go out for 5, 6 mile run on, and training runs and stuff like that. And I used to be writing in my head because you're on sort
Yes.
of automatic pilot. I used to be writing things or poems or songs or something as I was going along. And the worst thing was trying to remember what you got to. I had to sort of make sure I had a little pencil and paper in my pocket and stop
It,
and write.
exactly. I've had the same experience. I was a runner for most of my life till my knee gave out. But I would do the same thing. And I thought, I should carry my phone and dictate.
Yeah,
But
that's what I did,
that
you know,
takes
about.
away from the takes away from the running and I totally relate to that.
Well, I've related to this as it's been a lot of enjoyment, a lot of fun talking to you, and I'm
Yeah.
sure the listeners have as well. But what I'm going to do now, anyway, Mike, is hand the show over to you to have you tell everybody where people can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
Okay, I am going to put a plug in for the second Zach Winston book, which is coming out sometime in the next couple of months.
Okay.
Not entirely sure when. It's called Warm and Dead, and it's the sequel to Dead Already. So folks might want to be on the lookout for that. You can find me on my website, which is Mike J. Krentz, KRENTZ, .com. I'm also on Facebook, Mike Krentz Author, or at Mike J. Krentz Author. Instagram, MJ Krentz, Twitter, at Mike J. Krentz, and my books are available on Amazon and also at most major booksellers like Poison Pen and those Barnes and Noble have them, and but they're Amazon's probably the easiest place to find them.
Well, Mike, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barry. I totally enjoyed it, and I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Mike Krentz, KRENTZ, as I say, Z as you say, KRENTZ. And as he said, his own homepage is Mike J. Krentz. And there's all sorts of stuff there about the books and everything like that. Very good. You should always check out these authors' web pages. And as you said, a couple of new books, possibly one coming out, perhaps two coming out this year or early next year, anyway, the second one. Anyway, that's it for now. I'll be back on Sunday with my music programs from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Those were the days. Music from the 20th century. And the theme this week is sweets, candy. That sort of thing. Sweets in England, candy in America. I know. I do put an explanation at the start of the show, believe me. And then straight after that, between 6 and 7 p.m., we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s, to get you remembering or learning and get your feet tapping as well, I hope. And then next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be back with two more guests here on A Book and a Chat. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.